Hello and welcome to Someone Should Make This, a show where we do the hard part of coming up with great video game ideas and offer them up to the world. My name is Danish.
And I'm Jeff.
And I'm happy to welcome Jeff back.
I'm back, baby!
How's it going? Where have you been? What are you back from?
Yeah, you just like left without saying anything.
You peaced out. You couldn't get...
It was a little bit spur of the moment. We planned it in mid-July. And
we got a plan, man. You got to give us more time.
Yeah. I thought a month and a half was plenty, but so many of my affairs were not in order by the time I left. No, I went to the magical land known as Indianapolis.
Yay.
For one week. And
I actually didn't know where you went. You just told us.
I don't know where you went either.
Yeah.
I did stop
in
Memphis.
But Gen Con was canceled this year. Why'd you pick this year to go to Indianapolis?
So my partner's family's in Indianapolis. It's funny. I said Minneapolis. Her name is Mindy.
Yeah.
And we went to Indy.
That's what it's called.
So it's Minneapolis.
Did you make that joke the whole time you were there?
No, I
unfortunately
am a little,
just thought of it.
I just thought of it. I'm off my game. So, but we went there. We spent a week there. There's this new sport called pickleball. It's like new of a few years ago, but it's like kind of taken hold. It's like halfway between ping pong and tennis. And it turns out I'm pretty good at it. And it's a lot of fun.
Played a lot of that.
Oh man, I could go.
No,
on
I don't
and
want
on.
That. I don't.
But it is. It's like imagine halfway between ping pong and tennis. Like
ping pong.
It's a paddle, but the paddle is almost the size of a tennis racket. And then the ball is actually a wiffle ball.
So how much do you run? That's my big thing.
When I'm playing, I run a lot
constantly. But how much does the average person run?
The average person runs way less than you would in tennis. It's I mean, honestly, if you were to draw a line from ping pong to tennis and you just pick the point directly in the middle on everything, that's what it would be like.
So it's badminton?
It sounds like a mushy middle to me that I'd rather do one or the other.
Oh no, it's
fucking
it's so much good
over here.
Yeah, I know, right? But bigger highlight was driving through Illinois, which in 2020 became a green state. So we bought about $1,000 worth of weed as we went through Illinois on the way there.
Yeah, I didn't know
back.
What you meant either.
I was like, what party is green?
Oh,
there is a green party. So it's like, we're not a green state.
No.
What party's green?
You are so
I
green.
I ask again.
The green party is the one at my house because I have so many drugs.
You guys think I'm joking. I don't know who the green party is.
Well, there wasn't a green candidate.
The green party is largely environmental focused.
Oh, none of us know. None of us know.
There's too many bits. We're so deep in bits now.
I'm not doing a bit.
I don't know who the Green Party is.
Speaking of parties, speaking of bits, we had a stream. We had a voting stream on Sunday, just a couple
That's
days
right.
ago.
Exactly. When you're hearing this, it had just happened, and it went extremely well.
It was awesome.
Pause for edit. It went okay.
It could have been better.
Matt
Pause
said
Reddit.
Some dumb
I'm
gonna shit.
I'm going to take that responsibility.
Fucked up everything.
It went horrible.
Sorry, guys.
There we go. I think we got our bases covered.
I don't. Yeah, we'll not talk about it anymore. Yeah, but you can watch the VOD on the YouTube.
Yeah.
Or Twitch.
Yeah. If you guys haven't heard, I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about this sort of on our Twitter and everything. But it's an awesome initiative. Kind of put together by the Spawn on Me podcast. It's called Spawn for Good, No Voter Left Behind 2020 association with voterwriters.org. It's just a voting initiative to get people to get out there and vote. It's non-party affiliated, it's non-partisan. It's just whoever you want to vote for, but the important thing is to get out there and vote.
Now, Danish, yep. What if I want to vote for the Green Party? Who would I write down?
Well, I don't think there is a Green Party candidate this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, you know anyway. What? I want to step back a second. Jeff, you drove through Illinois. You didn't tell us. I guess we couldn't hang out even if we wanted to.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was worth it. And then as soon as we get into Indiana, we're in the Eastern time zone. So like it's even more removed, even though it's close.
Also, if you went to Indianapolis, you wouldn't have gone as north as us anyway.
Oh, no, not even close.
We would have to meet you down in Peoria.
Maybe I would. I've been dying for shit to do. I think you should have told
me. The furthest north we went was like Effingham.
Fuck it. That's their slogan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Mindy had the Sufjan Stevens song about not Effingham, but Effington, and how he started a whole new effing life in Effington with effing kids and
Danish effing doesn't job. Know who he's talking about. It's because Danish thinks it's pronounced Surf Jan Stevens.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, Surf Jan Stevens.
Really? Yeah. Bring the Illinois?
Nope.
Oh my!
He has a great
God,
song, nothing. Chicago, that was on. Shit, what was that show called? Was it? It's not The Candidate.
Not helping.
Anyway.
No, it's not. None of it's going to help. Danish doesn't know who Surf Jan Stevens is.
Well, maybe our listeners do, in which case they can write in and yell at me.
Please do.
I think that's fair. So, I think there should be a whole Reddit thread about Surf Jan Stevens on our subreddit.
So, in other news, I guess, moving on. I mean, we can talk about Kingdoms of Amalur, which is how that word looks.
Yeah.
Or we can talk about how me and Danish are both Bob Vila.
Let's move into Home Improvement.
Oh God,
that was great.
Yes. So I am not a handy person.
Me either.
But I decided to just do some shit and remodel one wall of my garage because it looked like garbage, and there was a bunch of shit like plastic vinyl stuff on the wall that was basically just covering up really shoddy drywall work. So yeah. My project for the last month, over the last few weekends, was to tear that shit down.
Month.
Yeah. every weekend, well, every other weekend, put in a couple hours, basically.
Put in a couple hours learning how to tell what shoddy drywall work looks like.
Well, no, you can tell because it looks like garbage. That did not take any education to learn that I peeled that thing away and I was like, oh my God, this is horrible. But no, it was basically just spackling and taping. I bought some drywall. I cut it to size. I cut out all the dents and holes that for some reason were in my wall.
You don't have to cut those out. You can patch them.
Not these. These were enormous.
Oh, the photo you sent us, it was a big hole.
Yeah, it was about 2 feet by 2 feet. Yes. But there were smaller ones where I did just do the patch kind of like mesh sticky thing. And then spackle the whole thing, sand the whole thing, you know, paint it and everything. I bought a cool, super sturdy iron shelving unit to put there. Oh. Basically, this all started because I had shelves on the wall from when I moved in that one day fell off the wall and took a lot of the wall with it. And so then I had to patch all that. And I thought, oh, shit, while I'm doing this, I might as well fix all these other problems. But it felt pretty good.
It does feel good.
Pretty good.
It's funny because I've been doing the exact same thing. I put in, I bought those new hyper expensive speakers that I shouldn't have bought and immediately realized I need to put in the rears for this so I can have that 5.1 action because mm-hmm. I got the unit for it. But that meant drilling into walls and running cables into my my crawl space, which is, if it was just my basement, I would have done it a long time ago, but I don't have a basement. I have a crawl space, which is a horrifying, possibly the most horrifying place on the planet. Yeah.
They shouldn't be legal. They're the worst.
They should not be legal. In fact, I'm thinking of digging it out and making a proper basement. But so I had to run all those cables and do stuff, and that part's easy. But much like Danish, I ripped out a wall in my garage so that I could like have really easy access to all that stuff. And now I'm in the process of patching it back up in a way so that none of this matters to our fucking video game podcast. I just feel good that I put like hammer to metal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just did some shit. That's what it's I'm for happy sure. about.
Definitely. And you know what? I have a reco for this week that I'll we'll circle back to this topic.
Tease of a reco.
Just tease it right now, but yeah.
I actually have one that goes with this too.
It's good stuff.
There's two things to look forward to. So keep listening.
Keep listening. This podcast just got started.
Don't turn us off yet.
Please.
So Jeff, you are playing Kingdoms of Amalur: The Re-Reckoning?
Yeah, so I will talk about this a little bit. Full disclosure, I got this game for free because my studio is also owned by THQ.
Oh, can you hook
And THQ
up?
Is the one. So do you have to put that out there for journalistic integrity reasons?
We're not journalists.
Yeah, we can do whatever the fuck we want.
I guess that's true.
Marvel
can
dope.
Lie all day.
but, you know, it's funny. I played it when it first came out and I liked it, and then it just like I kind of hit a wall where it just wasn't fun to play anymore, and I started it up again while I was on vacation. Took a break from Tony Hawk Pro Skater, which I know you went into great detail last week.
Yeah, just play all those remakes and don't play Avengers, which deserves a little bit of it.
Yeah, so you know, it's funny, I felt that again. I felt the thing I felt when I first played it, where it was like, oh, this is exciting. Like, this is kind of a cool world. Like, I like what they're doing with this. I like what they're doing with that. But I can also kind of feel in the back of my head, just like, I'm going to hit that wall again. Because it is just exactly the same game. And even less than Tony Hawk Pro Skater, all they did was up-res textures like that and some meshes. But it's almost like one-to-one the original game, which is a little disappointing. You know, it's kind of that Sonic Mania letdown where it's like, this isn't really an evolution.
You mean the Sonic Mania letdown that everyone on the planet enjoys except for you because it's got a 99% positive Metacritic?
I have no horse in this race.
That's Sonic Mania?
That's the one.
God, okay. This shit gets heated. Sure. Listeners, you don't want in on this. Danish just edited out 45 minutes of arguing about Sonic Mania.
I have in the past, yes.
Anyway, so yeah, Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning. It's kind of fun to go back down that road, but I have a feeling it's not
too many
last
games.
Too
I mean, like, unless it's something like Tony Hawk, which is like this really like high watermark of whatever genre it is. Mm-hmm. It's hard to go back to a remake because there's
the
just so many
called
games.
Nostalgia, yeah. That's the only reason why anybody's playing that.
Kingdoms of Amalur or Tony Hawk?
Tony Hawk.
Well, I think nostalgia is a big part of it, but it's also just a phenomenal game that we have it not is. Had that genre of game in like 10 years.
No, we have. They've been bad.
They have been bad. That's what I'm
saying. That's exactly right. They've been bad. And I'm, you know, so Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 was like the skateboarding game I played as a kid. And then
mine was 3. 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
SSX Tricky was my favorite snowboarding game. And like they just threw that series down the drain.
How about
after that?
BM Triple X.
Oh God!
I didn't play it.
That's like the yeah. Joke it's like the most embarrassing.
It is.
It constantly shows up on like the worst embarrassing games lists ever. You know?
Yeah, I got paid to say this.
But I mean, that reminds me. There's that really great kind of like classic Unity style downhill racing game. Not the new like kind of Battle Royale one that they announced. But
are you talking about Lonely Mountain Downhill?
Is it
That's
Battle
exactly
Royale?
The one I'm
because
talking about.
I could not figure out if that was Battle Royale or not.
I couldn't either, but it looked cool.
Because here's the thing. I saw. I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm cutting you off.
No. Go for it. Go for
really
it.
Quick.
What's it called again?
Don't care. I saw the trailer and I was like, oh, cool. Like a downhill BMX battle royale game. And then they showed more and I was like, I don't think it is battle royale. I can't tell. So I wrote it down as my own idea to bust out on an episode later.
And then we can claim credit for it. It's called Riders Republic, by the way.
Riders Republic. Yeah. Cause it's got everything. That. It's got bikes. It's got boards, it's got the whole thing, but
it's
I was
got
thinking,
riders, it's got Republican.
I was thinking Lonely Mountains Downhill though, just because it's I don't know, like there's something about it
phenomenal.
That's really intriguing. You've played it then?
Oh, I played a shit ton of it.
Okay, yeah, I got that one on my list as a to do.
Hey guys, let's do video game ideas now.
Hey, that sounds like a good idea.
All right, Matt, I hear that you have one of the best ideas you've ever done.
That's not what I said. Do you want me to do it first or should we do Jeff's first? Because Jeff, it's been a while. He's been out.
You know, mine might be quick and it's kind of related to my road trip. I can do that.
Yeah.
So ever since I was a kid, riding in, you know, the back seats or the passenger seats of cars, I would imagine, like, I would look out the window and I would imagine a little guy like running and jumping and like hang gliding and snowboarding.
Absolutely.
Like
I totally
on the side of the road,
That's
like
amazing.
Over. So here's the thing. Obviously, this is a common phenomenon, right? Where we just like kind of brain parkour, like as we drive in cars or
wasn't there
cars.
Like a Radiohead music video kind of about this? Not with a little guy, but it was like the, I don't even know if it was Radiohead. For some reason, that's what's in my mind right now. There was like, it was from a train and as scenery was going by to the beat of the music. Like if the beat was like,
right.
It would be like fence, barn. Like it
right,
was like,
right.
Right, right. That's cool. I've seen videos like that. Not specifically Radiohead, but I've seen videos like
that. I don't know if it was Radiohead, but it was anyway. Sorry, Jeff.
So I mean, this is the thing I'm talking about. We all do it. Apparently I didn't realize everybody did it, but I'm thinking like, okay, there are such amazing technologies that cars have inside them that have to do with like mapping the area around them, like staying aware of obstacles and things. I'm not even talking about self-driving cars. I'm just talking about like, you know, like rear view cameras that have sensors when someone's coming in from the side.
Have
and,
you
like,
seen
all this
cars that have the 360 like parking cam?
Yeah. Yeah. Like stuff like that.
It's
right.
Like
it's
this
really
fucking
cool.
Future.
So here's what I'm thinking. Just like level up those car sensors a little bit to get like a kind of point cloud map of the things that are happening on the sides of the car.
I think that's
have
LiDAR.
AR glasses that the passenger can wear, and like there can be like little cameras all around the roof for like motion tracking and to make sure the driver's not wearing these, because that would be super dangerous. But have like a little AR game where you're like making a little guy go around outside your car as you're driving around.
I don't even think you need to level up the car stuff that much. I think if you think about, like, there's so many AR things nowadays that are very smart about just what it's seeing. Like, even, like, you know, Zoom and all these face app things where, like, you don't need to put markers on your face to have it cut out your head.
That's true.
Like,
that's true.
That sort of stuff. So I wonder if you can just look out the window through your phone and it sees, it like, basically path traces, you know, fences and obstacles and cars and whatever is driving by, and you can use that to react to things.
Do you guys want to hear some shit?
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm obsessed with electric cars. Me and Kelsey both own an electric car. By the way, saves us a shitload of money to take a look at used electric cars if you want to save some fucking money. But one of the cars that I'm really excited about but will never be able to afford in my lifetime is the Audi e-tron GT. And there's a lot of videos going out recently of they'll test drive these cars before they're available, and before they want to like unveil them, they'll wrap them in it's like a camouflage like body wrap.
And oh, they're so like, cool looking too. It's like weird geometric shapes.
Yeah,
to break
geometric
up the
shapes
and stuff.
Swirls and all kinds of stuff that just like to the human eye breaks up all the body lines, so that you can't really tell what the car looks like other than like a really like generic silhouette of the car. And one of the things that we've done for work is called photogrammetry, where you take a bunch of photos of an object, generally like, you know, 360 low, medium, high, and then you can put it into software that can recreate these. It can kind of extrapolate the data that you've given it through photographs and create a model out of it. If you wanted an example of this, check out Avengers, because there's a level in Utah that I would put money on. It was made almost entirely with photogrammetry.
Star Wars Battlefront and Battlefront 2 also really heavy use this stuff, and they do it with movie props too, so it's even like one level cooler. Because
it's pretty common these days. It's not like
See also Unreal Engine 5 and Quixel Mega Scans. Like it's a almost an industry standard at this point, which is awesome.
So as a person who wanted to see what the final body of the Audi e-tron GT looks like, I found a video of somebody who like came across one parked and like charging at a car charger, and they walked around it like recording video. So I got all the image. I got that video and I exported every frame as an image.
Wait, you did this?
That's
so
cool.
That's amazing.
I did this. And I put it into some software that could like, you know, create a model out of it. And the you know, like generally it requires some pretty specific like lighting conditions and some pretty specific like camera settings and lenses and stuff. But I still got a pretty good version of this car as a 3D model, like that I could look at and like kind of get a good idea of what this car looks like. I feel like if I can do that just in my free time, for sure somebody should be able to just take the camera footage of any car and run it through some kind of thing to get any of the background geometry that you need for this game idea, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I would think so. I mean, that's kind of what this is all predicated on, right? Like really fast, like area mapping outside of your window. And like, I'm thinking about the AR glasses too, interacting with the window itself. So maybe the window has like a HUD, like where your window is, but then like everything else is like happening in kind of real space behind
that's
it.
Awesome.
Yeah, so
and I think and all you do is put 3D glasses on, and that window would be polarized. So then that projection would actually land in the environment. It would like actually push it back in 3D perspective into the environment. That'd be awesome.
So right now I'm sort of imagining like a Crash Bandicoot style game where you're either watching it from Crash Bandicoot you play from behind.
Here's the thing. Two game modes I have in my head. One is looking out the side window, and that's like a free runner kind of thing. But you look out your windshield, and then it's more like Star Fox, because you have like
this kind of
one point perspective thing and like the cars and everything.
Oh, and it could like when a semi is coming by, that's like a boss fight, and it just
be like
whatever happens to be on the road is just because like I think at the end of the day that clearly this isn't like the, you know what, we sort of got into this with the Mario thing last week where there's not really like levels, there's not really progression, you're really just like passing the time and playing a video game like video games were originally meant to be played, and that is for fun. Call me crazy, but yeah,
hot
like
takes over here.
It could just like grab data and make some weird generic, not generic, but randomized level out of it depending on whatever you're passing.
The other thing you can do is because it's like the car itself that's kind of running the system, you can use audio from the radio, like whatever music or podcast or whatever anyone's playing, to do some like procedural stuff too.
Radiohead.
Is that the name of the game?
Nope. I mean, it could be, I guess, but that'd be
weird. Guys are, I mean, I am so tempted right now to, not right now, this minute, but at some point do a basically an After Effects version of this pitch where it's like Mario Kart Live, but it's Star Fox Road on the road.
You heard it here, folks. Danish is going to do a video version of this pitch and put it up on the subreddit by next week.
It's also the new lead designer over at Nintendo.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if there's, is this one of those, like, do we need to expand this more? Like, that just seems like a really cool, solid
I mean, this
idea.
this is more like a technology, right? So it's just kind of like run with it.
Yeah, run with it. Although I hear we got some feedback that we need to like have more game ideas.
What?
What are you talking about? The airing of grievances?
Yeah.
No, I think it was mostly that we're just awesome and we should keep doing what we're doing. Those are all the grievances I remember. While we're talking about this, because I'm not going to have any other outlet for this idea that I have. It's not a game. It's a traffic idea.
Oh, we got so many.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So basically, I'm always annoyed by people not merging properly when two lanes go down to one.
Oh, my God, zipper. Dude. And four people at a stop sign is like the biggest clusterfuck in all of humanity.
So basically, my idea is that If all cars had AR in their windshields, or the roads themselves had whatever LED things on them, but basically you would have markers on the road that would dictate your speed and location. So it's like, you know, to get into zipper formation, you need to slow down or you need to speed up. And basically in the preceding, you know, whatever, however many miles, if all the cars get into the locations they're supposed to, when they merge, they just seamlessly zipper together and no one has to stop at all.
I would love,
and of course this would be, this is going to be like a done deal when everyone's self-driving, but until then I think this
self-driving is going to do that better than human beings ever could. Clearly.
I mean, I would love like a top-down aerial shot of just like perfect zippers. Like if somebody could compile that on YouTube for me, like maybe in like a half hour length, that would be great, because I could just zen out to that.
Oh, just watching people do driving right, that'd be
right.
Oh my god, that's the best.
I did have a scenario where me and two other cars drove up to opposing stop signs and all three of us went at the correct time, and it was like a stand it was like noteworthy. Like I remember it happening because I drove up and I was like, fucking this again, and it worked out, and it works out so infrequently that I was surprised by it.
There used to be a four-way stop on my way to work, and I would say,
and then you cut all
19
the
out of 20 mornings, it was just the worst experience ever.
I guess I'm not really sharing your guys' experience with stop signs.
Danish,
that seems
guy
a pretty like open and shut case.
That's the point. It's easy as fuck. The person farthest to the right goes first, and then you go clockwise. That's how it's supposed to go. But nobody fucking does that. Nobody fucking does that. It's just like, oh, I got here first. Or here's what happens more often is somebody's like, oh, I don't want to have the responsibility of going first, so I'm going to do 2 miles an hour for like 30 seconds up to the stop sign so that I don't have to take responsibility. But then the other guy's doing the same fucking thing. And then I'm just like, for Christ's sakes, guys, just do the right thing. But it's
I feel very blessed that I have not hit this. Like maybe once a year I'll get into a guy, like the guy stopped first, I stopped second, he should go, but he's not. And I'm like, waiting for 10 seconds and like, fuck it, I'm going to go. Like, that sort of
thing.
10
seconds
happens.
Is an eternity.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily, maybe like
see,
five
is,
or two,
this
whatever.
This is what would happen
but
to me.
My point is, that happens to me once a year.
Oh, no. So what happened to me a lot was get to this four-way stop. There's four cars there. One of them had obviously been there first and is already partway through the intersection. And the person going the opposite way, like in the same direction, you know, but the opposite way, will see them in the intersection and think, oh, I don't need to wait for the other side to go. I'll go too because they're still in the intersection. But of course, by the time they get in the intersection, they're the only ones there. And then the person opposite them starts going. And then cross traffic is just sitting there being like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
And then everybody hits each other and dies. It happens all the time. And
big fiery explosion.
It's disgusting. And like, here's the problem. Like, you get so trained to do stop signs wrong. Like, I go up to a stop sign and I know the guy to my right, he's supposed to go first because we got here about the same time. So priority goes to the person farthest to the right. That's how that shit works. But they don't go. And they don't go for the last 15 years of my life. So I'm just trained to be like, all right, I got the stop sign at the same time. I'm just going to go because I know nobody fucking knows what they're doing. But then on the off chance that I get there with somebody who actually does know what they're going, I look
you're
like the
asshole
because I have been trained to do it wrong. It's awful. Like, stop signs are the worst. We need AR cars that are like, you go first, and then that guy goes, and they just like tell you what to do, or robots take over the whole world, and then it's not a problem anymore. Fuck it.
Listeners, is this a thing? I really want to know.
It's 100% a thing. It is totally.
I can't.
Totally,
I mean, yes, it's happened to me on occasion, but like not a thing.
I could drive to Lowe's right now, and I guarantee you, some old fucker in a Suburban.
Wait, this is happening to you where we live right now.
Absolutely, you live in front of one of the worst stop signs, like four-way stops.
Dennis is
America.
The fucking problem. That's why he doesn't see it.
That's what I think. I think so. That was fun. I think we should do more of them.
Hey, Matt, you got an idea.
I have an idea that Danish
over. That was someone should make this traffic.
Oh, shit.
Our most popular segment.
The traffic cam where I just complain. Okay, guys, hey, I have a game that involves a genre that I don't have a lot of experience with. So I feel like the idea that I've come with is pretty cool. But Danish, I think you're going to be kind of my point man on this to see if this even works. And
it's a dating game?
It's a dating game, and everybody knows that Danish is the date master, and he can get a date like that.
As long as they're pigeons? You know that one bird dating sim game?
No, I don't.
Hatoful Boyfriend, it's a dating game, but they're all birds.
I've heard that name before.
I didn't realize that was all about birds.
I had no clue that was about birds.
I never played it. I think it's a funny concept.
It is.
Anyway.
Okay. So this is a hidden role game. And I came up with a name even. And the name I've come up with is Icy Dead People, which is a pun.
Ooh. Is Dan rubbing off on you?
No, it's just a pun that really kind of doesn't have a whole lot to do with the rest of it. I just thought of it. Okay. So the way this game works is I was thinking of hidden role games and how generally when a hidden role game starts, it's like, okay, you are the werewolf, or you are this, or you are that. And it's sort of like, okay, I have this information right away. I need to keep it to myself, and I need to somehow, you know, lie, cheat, steal my way to victory and keep some information away from some people or whatever. The thing I thought would be more interesting is, what if I started this game, and Danish, this is kind of going to appeal to a couple of your ideas. What if I started this idea and I don't know what my role is to begin with. Like, so part of the game is figuring out what my role is to start. Okay. And then I think once you're starting there, I've realized that the game also becomes figure out what everybody else's role is because they're also kind of trying to figure that out at the same time, right? So there's this sort of opportunity of like, see what clues other people are trying to pick up on while you're trying to pick up on stuff. And, you know, rather than just being like, I'm the werewolf, therefore I'm gonna try to not do werewolf shit or make it obvious that I'm doing werewolf shit. It's like, okay, I think I'm the werewolf, so I need to go investigate werewolf shit, but also try not to let other people know that's what I'm doing. So like if people are paying attention, they might pick up on like what I'm doing and trying not to do, that sort of thing. So and werewolf is just an example I'm using. That's not actually what this game is, although it's pretty close. So the idea I have is players wake up in like a giant mansion with no knowledge of who they are, like I just said, and there is a murder scene somewhere in this mansion. The idea is each player must piece together a clue about who they are, piece together clues about who they are and who the other players are. And then once they do, each player has to accomplish a task which may or may not align with the other player's tasks. So what I'm after here is, like I said, players are kind of figuring out who they are. They're also trying to figure out who the other players are. But then I want to open up opportunities for players to sort of align with other players that they think might be embodying other roles. So kind of getting like weird buddy cop scenarios where you and another player think you're working together and you may not actually be, but you're trying to like, you know, get that sort of grouping going, because there are cases where two players, if they can find each other in this weird mishmash, will work together very well. But that's sort of part of the game, is figuring out if you're going to work together with other players. So the roles that I've come up with are a ghost who is the victim of said murder.
Nice.
So you wake up, you're a ghost. And originally I was thinking like maybe you can walk through walls or you can go through doors and stuff, but I think that's too obvious. Like you're immediately going to walk through a wall and be like, oh, I'm the fucking ghost, clearly. So I think they should be able to interact with the world like anybody else. But somehow maybe by investigating the murder, they can realize that like they're wearing the same clothes as the murder victim or something and be like, oh shit, I'm the ghost.
Or it's like Wile E. Coyote and they don't like turn ghost until they realize they're the ghost.
Yeah. There's some kind of coyote time involved with ghostisms. And then once you realize you're the ghost, because like I said, once you figure out who you are, you now have a task to perform in order to like win the game or win the round as that role. So they have to accomplish some kind of hidden task, such as reclaiming an artifact from the house. And like maybe this is sort of like unfinished business. Like maybe that player went in to get their like an amulet, like a family amulet or something. You know, just fucking weird example. That's ghost. The next one is the murderer, the person who killed you, I guess. And their job is to cover their tracks from the murder, hopefully frame somebody else for the murder, and maybe for extra points, get the ghost banished. Because the ghost is going to be like the ultimate nail in the coffin as far as like figuring out who murdered you, you know, or not.
All right, well, one question real quick. I'm totally with you with the hidden roles and no one knows who they are, but is the ghost not apparent that they're a ghost to other people?
Yeah, no, I think it, in order for this to work, I feel like they just look and act like anybody else.
Right.
Because other, like I said, otherwise it's just like, you know, you try to like pick something up and it doesn't work, and, or you'd look clearly like a ghost and everybody's like, that's the fucking ghost right there. But maybe we can roll that into gameplay. I'll get to that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So right now we have ghost, who currently acts like everybody else, needs to figure out they're the ghost. We have murderer, who doesn't know they're a murderer, needs to somehow gather clues and figure out that they are the one who murdered the victim. Third is the detective, who obviously needs to figure out who the murderer is and stop them. And that seems a little more simple than the other two roles, but I think the act of putting together the clues might be a more involved process than the other two characters have to worry about. So that's ghost, murderer, and detective. And then we have a ghost hunter. Their job is to trap the ghost, and I wrote, they're just in it for the payday. They don't care about anything else. They just gotta trap this ghost and get out of there. Very simple, just figure out who the ghost is.
Here's a question. I don't want to derail this, but why is the ghost hunter there before anyone was killed?
Oh no, everybody's waking up after the murder happened.
Right,
but the ghost hunter would have to have been there to wake up at the scene.
Yeah, he got called in, and for some reason everybody's got amnesia for some reason and fell asleep.
So he arrives as everyone's waking up.
Yeah, I want you to imagine that you have a cockroach in your house and you say, hey, cockroach guy, I need you to come over to get rid of this cockroach. Cockroach guy comes in, explosion goes off, you guys wake up the next morning, you don't know who you are.
So this is a little interesting now. Because you could use the start time and like offset that for different roles, and that could be kind of interesting.
That is interesting
on how you do it.
Hang on to that, because there is one more role, and this one is sort of optional. Because before I said the ghost looks like everybody else, but I then had this idea of the seer, who is the only person who can see or hear the ghost. So maybe imagine you wake up, you don't know you're the ghost yet. You walk outside, and you're trying to like talk to people, and they're not responding to you. And I think there's going to be a little bit of time where you're like, maybe they're doing other shit. Maybe they're not focused on me, but maybe that is how you figure out you're the ghost. So, and then you can come across somebody, this seer, who actually can see and hear you. And their job is to somehow perform whatever ritual the ghost needs in order to move on from this life. They can help the ghost accomplish their task. But they can also, be tricked into banishing the ghost by accident. So that sort of goes back to, the murderer who doesn't want the ghost to be around to maybe give incriminating evidence.
Right. Yeah. And that kind of plays with the Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
So real quick, if I may interject,
yeah,
this idea of the seer being like the only one who can communicate with the ghost, I feel like there should be some like a gradient of spiritual sensitivity. So some people can see whoever the ghost is, but they can't talk to them. They can't hear them.
Okay.
So like, just to make it a little bit harder for the ghost, oh, kind of like the sixth sense sort of thing, right? Like,
oh, that's like, good. Yeah. Yeah.
Like different people have varying levels of
sensitivity,
awareness of the ghost character. And that like, that could be the thing that helps blur the line.
Because then I can walk up to somebody and be like, hey man, what's going on? And they can respond to me, but they don't see me, but maybe they just don't, you know, it's, you know, they might not realize.
Yeah, I like that. Like some people can only hear, some people can only see. A little bit of confusion. You're not sure.
Check this out. Okay. Love that. We'll keep that. So you have your roles that Matt kind of outlined.
Yeah.
And then a subset of those roles are some of your character traits, one of which would be sensitivity. Mm-hmm. So every one of the players / characters gets like this random stats. And one of them is like, okay, how sensitive are you?
Nobody gets everything except for the seer, right?
Well, yeah, wouldn't no it be everything. Crazy though if it was random and like maybe the murderer had like super high sensitivity, so he never realizes that that person's the ghost because he sees them as a normal person?
So the seer is not an explicit class. Somebody could just potentially be a seer.
Well, no, I think it is, but I think that there should be stuff that's like close to seer and that it should be random.
Interesting.
Right. That's kind of where I was going. But also, if you lump in a little bit more like Rogue Legacy style traits, like genetic traits, like maybe one guy just cannot speak, and so the murderer. Yes.
This is exactly what I needed you for, is like that these intersect and like become more blurred lines,
because what happens is I'm just a guy who can't speak, but someone else who has a sensitivity of 5 out of 10,
they can see the ghost.
They think they can see me as a ghost and think I'm the ghost because I can't speak, even though I am not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like different kind of variables clashing in certain ways.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Totally. So I'm guessing that to fill out this roster, there are like just regular party goers that are kind of in the background, or is this just like a 5-player game?
Well, so that's sort of my last question, is like, are there other possible characters? Are there some people who are just filler, which kind of sucks for those people if you get chosen as just party goer and you're sort of chasing nothing the whole time, but maybe that does end up being interesting.
So, I mean, maybe you can, you know, like these, the roles you have outlined so far are kind of like the main roles, but maybe there are kind of filler roles, but they're still tangentially related. Like maybe there's the nephew who is really into the paranormal and he wants to start a YouTube series on ghost hunting or something, you know, like just to, there's an old guy who's really into antiques and he's also like looking for this amulet. So it's not like as direct, but they still have interaction.
Oh, there could just be like the homeowner who doesn't want their shit stolen.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
So you could do all these kind of B-level characters that have like, instead of, you know, three things going for them, they have one thing that interacts with the main story.
So the homeowner is literally just trying to like follow people around and make sure they don't steal anything.
Right.
Exactly. That's awesome. There's a lot of like of these roles in werewolf, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there's the one guy who just, all he wants to do is get eaten by a werewolf, you know, like, like the fool or whatever he's called. So I think some of these traits could be like I said, part of the genetic traits, you know, like you are whatever. You want someone to win, or you're infatuated with someone else and you want whatever they want. You know, that sort of thing.
I feel like the one thing, we played that werewolf game on VR back when the PlayStation VR first came out. And I remember one of the roles was like somebody who was not a werewolf, but wanted to be accused of being a werewolf. So maybe there's somebody who is not the murderer, but wants to take the fall for the murderer.
Right, exactly.
And that gets a little interesting, though, because remember, you wake up and you don't know whether you're the murderer or not. So somehow you have to figure out that you're this person who wants to be charged as a murderer.
Yeah. So let's talk about this.
Yeah.
How are character or how are players figuring out who the character is?
Well, I think it all starts with finding the murder scene, right? Like as soon as you find the murder scene, I think a few things are come out of that. Like immediately, like and maybe the clothes that the victim is wearing. Like I imagine their face is all like mangled
See,
or something.
I feel like they should be covered in a sheet the whole time, so that like because the player who has the same clothes is instantly gonna be like, oh, I'm the ghost, and everyone's like, oh, they're the ghost. Like, and then their thing is kind of over at that point.
Yeah. So maybe there's. Well, I don't think I want them to be covered in it. Well,
maybe there's just like a knife sticking out through the sheet, like they were murdered through it or something.
I think you can. You don't need to have the ghost dressed like the guy. Like, it could be the residual self-image version. Of
right,
the ghost,
right.
You know.
Okay, so some different murder scenes like that can be randomized. Like maybe in some murder scenes, like the shoes are exposed, and you can like really easily be like, "Oh, those are my shoes. I'm the fucking victim." But also maybe another person could have those same shoes, so that's not like 100%. Things like a bracelet,
or like they're crushed under a piano, and all you see are like. A pant leg, like one pant leg, and it's just like, oh, three people have those pants on.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
But also I'm wearing like piano movers shirt. you could dole out these weird little interesting clues that are not in any way 100%. Like I could be a piano mover, but I could be the murderer. I could have used that as my way of killing this person, like because I'm the fucking mover. That's a good way of like staging a murder.
Hear first, folks.
What?
Piano mover.
What?
Great cover for murder.
Oh yeah, if you want to murder somebody, be a piano mover. That's straight out of cartoons.
As long as the piano is made out of ice.
Yeah,
it was established. No. Ice weapons.
I guess that brings up a good question: is should anybody ever be positive of what their role is? I feel like there should be a way to get to 100%. Like, oh yeah, this is definitely me.
I feel like,
sure.
Well, yeah.
I want to back up for a second though. Like, we're talking about the circumstance. Like, you find the body or whatever. Like, Jeff, I thought this is what you were going for. Is like, what is the moment to moment in hidden role games?
Because
it's talking. We were just talking about that game Among Us, which just came out. This kind of blowing up a bit. And in that game, everyone is on the spaceship, and you're supposed to carry out tasks. And the imposter is basically supposed to prevent those tasks from being carried out and kill people. So that's like a thing that happens. So basically, what's the equivalent of that? Is there something that's supposed to... Are there objectives that have to be done? Like, how do people go looking for clues while other people are maybe hiding clues? As far as what happened. And then there's also like the mystery of who you are.
Right.
Maybe there's a way you can unlock flashbacks or something like glimpses
of like. I'm trying to think of like what does that moment look like when you get a piece of information? And maybe it's, I don't like the idea of flashback in this because it takes you out of the here and now. And I'm kind of envisioning this as a VR game.
I'm imagining it as first person for sure. VR could definitely be
regardless, more. First person VR, you know, like tiers of information. Like the first thing you need to do is figure out your name. And like that might be as easy as pulling out your wallet and seeing like, oh, my name is George Harrison. I'm a Beatle. And then that was a bad example.
That was great.
But you know, you pull out your wallet and it's just like, oh, George. And like, there's my photo.
Another
and then like,
Beatle.
Maybe you're walking through the house and you see a painted portrait of yourself. And it's just like, oh, this must be my house. Like that kind of line of logic where everybody should be able to figure out their name fairly quickly, like whether it's a dinner place setting, if like the event is a banquet or, you know, something like that, and then be able to go from there with environmental clues. I think that's how that feels clean to me.
It does feel clean. The only thing that I would say is like, I don't want it to be like, okay, this is my name. I'm going to search the walls for the painting because I know that there's always going to be a painting of this.
Right.
I want it to be sort of like, it could be a painting. It could also be
you can go to a filing cabinet and look at like tax returns or whatever.
Yeah, and there's these different options. So you can't just be like, once you've played it a couple times, you can't just be like, okay, these are the things I need to look for. You know, like I want it to be a little more.
So
yeah, I think
every
the
role
randomization
has
could
five like, you know, whatever clues scattered throughout, and maybe if you find all five, you get the most sure, but if you find one or two of them, you have a pretty good idea. Like maybe if you're a guest, like it's not your house, and you find some, you know, Rolodex or whatever, some equivalent of that, where you see, oh, like he just called me, like this address book is open on the table, and if I see my name there or something like that, like, oh, he must have called me over to his house or something. You know, there has to be some sort of leaps that you have to make.
Yeah, I like this idea of like five clues in the house and then like the progression being kind of simpler but still linear, where
basically Matt, gone home. Like it's like a gone home style.
Well, Matt, you were talking about like having an objective. Like once you figure out who you are, you have an objective.
You then have something maybe, you have to accomplish. Yeah.
Right. And so maybe like three out of five clues, you are like, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm this person. And then like the objective pops up on the screen. It's just like, do this thing. And maybe through the course of that, you might get like one more clue and you're four out of five now. And then that objective becomes clearer or it changes a little bit. And so if you get all five, you have like, you know, maybe it's like a multi-stage thing that's like worth bonus points or something like that to complete.
Yeah, it's a little bit video gamey, but I think it's okay where if like, if you come across a clue and you just like click on it or whatever, the game can store that information. And if you find enough clues, how does that, because I don't know, I don't want it to just be like you're running around clicking on stuff and then the game tells you.
Well, what if, and forgive me for taking such a literal leap here, but the game Clue, you have this notebook that you carry with you the whole time you're going through this mansion and you are manually marking things off. So maybe it's more user driven like that, or maybe there's a little bit of a flow chart.
Like LA Noir. It's LA Noir where like your character's writing in the notebook, but it's like filling out like it writes like, you know, visitor ? Or like, you know, it's like your thought bubbles are, the game is doing that. But if you hit certain points, then it's going to fill out those thought bubbles for you in your notebook. And then you can start crossing them off and circling them or doing.
Yeah. Whatever. So what if it's like, I think we should drill down on sort of like one character and try to figure out what their journey, so to speak, would be. And like, okay, so like, let's say the ghost is the first thing I've written down. So let's say you wake up, you go to, you end up finding the murder scene, like kind of everybody does, right? Because it should be pretty fucking obvious. And you get...
Actually, you know, real quick, Jeff was saying it should be covered up by a sheet. I would say it should be like massive head trauma so that you can't identify.
That's kind of what I was thinking. But so, also you can't see your own face anyway, so maybe...
Right, because the thing that I'm thinking of is like you're gonna instantly see like male or female avatar or, you know, whatever options there are, whether it's randomly assigned or whatever, you're gonna see like clothing choices, and like if they were holding something you'd see that too. So like I guess it's just depends on how much information you want to give to the player all at once.
Yeah, so let's say you walk up to it and I mean, what could be interesting is like I'm starting to like VR more, because in VR you can like look at your own body, you can hold your hands up in front of you and like get information of just like skin pigmentation and like you're missing a finger or you're wearing a bracelet, right? Like tons of stuff like that.
Missing a finger is good.
Yeah, so like maybe I can hold my hand up and I can be like, oh shit, I'm missing. Well, maybe it's a little too obvious, but like maybe I have a bracelet on, and so like I can look at the bracelet and be like, mark that as a clue, and like maybe you can mark almost anything as a clue. Like there's a fucking coffee mug over on the table. I can mark that as a clue. And you can only mark so many clues because I don't want people just running around marking shit. But then I go to the body and I'm like, oh, same bracelet, mark that as a clue. Now the game is able to draw that connection and be like, okay, you have a pretty good chance of being the murder victim, but you still have a little bit of potential to be these other things. So you can either check out those other things to narrow it down, or you can follow this murder victim thread. And
okay, yeah, so you put it as a choice for the player of what they want to do, like how little information they want to be able to act on.
Right, and something to keep in mind is like other people are going to come up to that body and be like, fucking bracelet, that dude and that dude have the exact same bracelet, keep an eye on them, right? So like,
check this out, once you reach an epiphany of who you are, you get powers.
Yes, exactly.
so the ghost gets fucking ghost powers where they can start like telekinesis,
go invisible,
shit.
Go through walls,
and then like the detective gets like the equivalent of like detective mode, like, oh shit, I'm the detective, and I'll suddenly like all his like detective skills. Oh, he can like he can
highlight skills a little faster, clues a little faster. Maybe he can he can more effectively. It's like you remember.
He should
who
be
you
able
are.
To see like footstep trails of where everybody's walking, and like he should get like an infrared camera. Like when the ghost goes through a wall, there's like a cold spot on it or something.
Well, he's okay. He's not the ghost hunter. Should get that.
Because
the detective doesn't know how to follow ghosts. But like maybe
the
he can.
Ghost hunter needs like the EM meter.
Maybe he the detective can inspect the body a little more efficiently and gather more clues off of that. He can like your average person just like whatever's presented they get, but like the detective can be like, oh, like tread pattern on the boots, maybe I can get some where I can follow like the path or something and find other clues that way.
That's good.
But so what's the there has to be a push and pull of not revealing who you are, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise the game sort of just like breaks down. So like you don't want to expose yourself as the detective because the killer will probably want
to
kill
the killer probably wants to get rid of that detective as fast as
possible. I think that's what's good about the roles you have, because if I recall correctly there are six roles roles.
I got five here.
Okay, but there's like an overlap where like three of them could go for the ghost, three of them could go for the killer, with the medium kind of or the seer being that swing state because they can either help the ghost or hurt the ghost. So
yeah,
that interaction is really
sort
cool.
Of gotten to them.
Right. So you have, you know, five people and essentially two teams that are kind of like vying for control of the situation with that. And I think there's enough there for the push and pull to balance out.
Okay. So here's an interesting idea that I don't think I've seen before. So as we've been talking about, different characters in Werewolf or whatever have different win conditions. Now, what if we formalize a way to change your win condition? So for example, in a game like Diplomacy or something, like there's a lot of table talk, and I'm talking about the board game Diplomacy. There's a lot of table talk where it's like, hey, let's team up and take out this other country or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like alliances and things. Mm-hmm. Now, what if there was a formalized way of doing that in this game where if I can convince you, if I tell you enough things or give you enough clues, you agree to certain things, and eventually I basically changed the video gamey objective on your screen to something else. And now your objective actually changes and your win condition changes.
Okay, so like, I think you're phrasing this as like, different people can form alliances with different other people, right? So you have the ghost and you have the seer, who obviously, that's like the obvious connection. Like they want to form an alliance for sure. But maybe the ghost also wants to trick somebody else into forming an alliance. Like maybe they want to trick the murderer into forming an alliance with them so that they can lead the detective to the murderer or something like that. Like,
right. If I can convince you that I'm the detective, even though I'm not, and you then basically, if you agree to help me, now your objective is find the killer when I'm, or whatever, like the made up objective that I've fooled you with. I guess the detective. No, that's right.
No, here's the thing. There's such a web here, right? And don't get me wrong. I came up with this idea like an hour before we started recording, so I did not like fucking plot out
a lot of
different things. But like, there's definitely some sort of web of deceit and lies that can be formed in all of this stuff. That it's probably not that beneficial for us to get into, just because like.
Sure.
You know, that sort of thing can change based on
that's for Jordan on the subreddit.
Yeah, so you're right.
So let me throw this out real quick, because I really like that idea, Danish, of like altering objectives. And I'm thinking about the kind of B characters and how they're just, you know, they still have something that they're interested in, like a goal that they want to achieve. But maybe when they team up with like one of the Fab Five, they like like they become Voltron, and like now they have like, you know, a whole new set of objectives because those two people have teamed up. So maybe there's an interaction in there that could be explored to do what you're talking about.
Oh, you know what would be interesting is, let's say there's people who just are sort of straight up red herrings. And I like, and this is the thing, I'm curious, this is the sort of thing I would totally just be like play test and see if it works. But like, I really like the idea of like, I wake up, I'm nobody. I've got no fucking horse in this race, but I'm still trying to like form these connections. Like I have the bracelet. I have like a wound on my forehead or something. And I'm just like, I've convinced myself that I'm the murder victim, but I'm totally not. Like, like I could be positive that I'm the ghost and be like, guys, I'm the fucking ghost. And like, tell, like we need to form an alliance.
It reminds me of one of the best Futurama episodes ever, when Fry thinks he's a robot. Have you ever seen that one? Oh, it's incredible. I have something to hit you with if we don't have any other things to add to this?
No, I don't think so.
Well, yes, I think someone should make this. This is an incredible idea.
Someone should make this. Definitely.
Okay. Here's where the bombshell comes in. There's a movie that I saw. I was trying to figure out the name of it. I finally found it. It's a movie called Unknown in 2006.
Well, no wonder couldn't think of it.
With a stellar cast, including Greg Kinnear, Joe Poliantano, Barry Pepper, Jim Caviezel, Peter Stormare, and Bridget Monaghan.
Jesus. Wow.
And it is about a group of people who wake up in a factory with no memory.
Oh, my God.
And they have to piece together the clues of who they are. And when they do that, they realize that some of them were kidnappers and the others were kidnapped.
That's so fucking good.
That's really good.
Yes. So I saw this movie a long time ago. It's a good movie. It's not amazing because like the premise is just so juicy. And I would say that it fulfills like 80% of that premise.
I mean, it's got Jesus in it.
It's a very solid movie, but it's not like as amazing as it could be because the premise is so good. But I still recommend it. It's called Unknown. It came out in 2006.
Sounds like it's ripe for a remake.
In video game form.
I think they should. Yeah, in video game form. Seriously, this would be...
Yeah, Unknown the game.
Yeah.
I love it.
Amazing. All right. Well, that was awesome. Awesome idea. Hopefully, I don't know. This game we alluded to, there's a game called Among Us, which is, like, when you see it, it's extremely crudely drawn and, like, just kind of, like, pieced together. It's a very sort of, like, lo-fi.
They look like Fall Guys beans.
They did look like Fall Guys beans. But the whole thing was, like, it's just very well constructed, like, game theory-wise. And it's just very fun. It's kind of blowing up. And there's no reason why this game can't be that. Like, it doesn't need to be... yes, obviously the VR first-person version of it would be awesome. But it really could just be stick figures running around this, you know, crudely drawn environment doing this stuff.
And
that, like, I think that
might
still...
even work better where, like, if the clue is, like, bracelet and you're looking at five stick figures, you can really quickly be like, bracelet on that one, bracelet on that one.
Yeah,
you know
yeah, yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that might almost work better. I still like the VR right. thing just because
oh, for sure. It's yeah. great. Yeah, it's great. Very cool. All right. Well, you guys got some recos for this week before we close it out?
Jeff,
oh, yeah, we
got?
Do. Yeah. So this is something that I discovered when I moved from Chicago to Austin because, you know, it's a long drive. So we split it up in a couple days. But Hilton has a line of hotels called Home 2, which are like they're more deluxe suites. Like they have like a full kitchenette. And when I say full kitchenette, I mean like dishwasher, sink, fridge, microwave. They have dishes and stuff. A dishwasher.
They're trying to compete with Airbnb, basically.
Well, I don't think it's that because Hilton, Marriott, like they always have a line of hotels. I think Marriott has like residences, and they're for people, you know, traveling on business who need to be somewhere for like a month. So they're right. like almost like little apartments. And so Home 2 is like that, except it's super, super budget priced. So, like, for instance, we stayed at a Home 2 and it was $115 and we had like a beautiful room with like all these amenities and stuff. They have like gyms and pools and all this stuff, which obviously you can't use right now, but it's such a great deal. And both times we've gone, it's been practically empty. And I don't understand why more people don't stay here because like it's like the price of a Super 8, but with all the stuff from, you know, like a really nice hotel.
When you say both times, are you talking about are either of those times before quarantine?
One of them was before, a year before, and one of them was two days ago.
Yeah.
But really great. So that's a reco. If anyone's traveling, recommend checking out Home 2. They're all over the place in the U.S. Second reco is a show on Netflix called Grand Designs.
I've watched this as well.
I'm really liking it. I'm really into architecture just as like a kind of background hobby. So I love shit like this. I've recoed other kind of home and architecture shows. This one's cool because like Danish and Matt, it's about people who take building a house into their own hands.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah, you basically just built the whole house.
Pretty much.
But it's crazy. Some of the things these homeowners or these builders do and like the budgets that they do them on, it kind of makes the idea of having like a super cool, super interesting architecturally house like attainable because like one of them was only like £240,000. This is in the UK, which is like $500,000, which is like the going price for a house in a city right now.
Oh God, a fucking cheap house. You kidding me?
Exactly.
There's an episode I saw. I think it might even be the finale of season 15 or whatever. It's weird. On Netflix, there's like season 13 and 15 are the two seasons you can watch on Netflix.
Right.
But in any case, the season 15, there's a later episode where a guy takes 10 years to build his house. And because he wanted to build it basically from the ground up using completely like local resources and everything himself, like he built it himself. And very rarely brought in other people to do it. And it was crazy. And it's an awesome, weirdo house. It looks great. But just the philosophy of building it became like his whole thing. And it's just it was an awesome episode. So I highly recommend that.
Yeah, it's a good show.
It's a good show. There's a show on Apple Plus called Home, which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about. So if you are into that, maybe you should check that out as well.
Cool.
Matt, what do you got?
So my reco this week is, I believe by the time this episode goes out, the date will have passed. But it is, I want to call him a comedian, but he's written for, he's written, produced, done like tons of stuff, like Funny or Die, At Midnight. What else we got?
Did you say James Corden he was writing for?
Yeah, I wrote for James Corden. Tons of stuff. Look him up. His name is Demi Adijuibe. Which I'm not going to try to spell. His first name is spelled D-E-M-I. And he specifically puts up videos on YouTube every September 21st to the song by Earth, Wind & Fire, September, which talks about September 21st. The 21st night of September is the way they actually say it. And the first time he put up this video, it was this like kind of silly dance routine. I don't know if he had a goal in mind or if he was just doing something for fun, but he put up basically like a little music video of himself dancing around to this song. And I think it must have picked up, you know, a little bit of popularity. And then every year since then, I think it's like 4 or 5 years since then, he's gradually gone up in complexity to the point of like hiring a mariachi band and like, you know, just doing like more and more complex things every year. And it's almost become like this little like mini holiday on Reddit where it'll show up on September 21st. Everybody's waiting for this video to drop and it finally does. And, you know, whatever it is, it is. He got so much popularity that he has turned it into his own little like fundraiser. And I wish I think I lost the page, but... Dan, should you go do some?
We can put it in the show notes.
We can put it in the show notes, but it is an environmental fundraiser. I want to look it up though. That seems like kind of important.
Well, here, why don't you look it up? I'm gonna add on to yours actually. While you're doing that, is Demi had a awesome podcast called what's it called? Punch Up the Jam.
None of us know anything.
So
Punch Up the Jam is a fun name.
Yeah. So one of the other things he's sort of famous for is he has these like end credit Will Smith rap videos, and he does it for a number of movies. My favorite is Arrival, where he'll basically pretend that he's Will Smith doing a, you know, Wild Wild West style like movie recap rap at the end of the credits. And so that's something he's done. And but so he basically kind of made a whole podcast out of it called Punch Up the Jam, where they take a song and basically break it down and try to rewrite the lyrics for it. So one episode I'm going to highly recommend to you guys specifically as well is the Kiss from a Rose by Seal episode because Travis McElroy is on it as a guest.
Nice.
And it's very funny. It's a very good episode because the whole episode they're talking about how, and I don't know if you really are aware, but Kiss from a Rose is a famously like indecipherable song. Like the lyrics are like nonsense.
It's from the
almost.
Batman soundtrack too.
Yep. Yes, from the Batman soundtrack, exactly.
Which is like equally weird.
It is weird. So they try to figure out what the song is about, and they actually fucking do it. They figure out what it means, and in real time on the podcast, you can hear them going like, "Oh my god, I think we've cracked it," and it's great. It's an awesome episode. So check that out.
Once he gained popularity in these YouTube videos that I was talking about, Danish gracefully bought me time to figure this out. He started selling t-shirts that are just basically like a black t-shirt or a white t-shirt that simply says September 21 on it. I own one. And if you buy one, 100% of the proceeds go to the Climate Mobilization Project, which is really nice because our climate is fucked and we should mobilize on it, I guess. Yeah, so check that out. I mean, even if you don't want to like buy a t-shirt or whatever, you could also just donate to those things or things that you find important. But at least check out his YouTube videos. They're very fun. Try to watch them in order to see this like progression of complexity in his videos that they done. Again, it's Demi Adijuibe, but it's probably better to just look up Demi September 21 on YouTube and you should be able to find his YouTube page.
Yeah, that's awesome. I completely endorse that recommendation.
Hey, good. I haven't endorsed any of my other ones.
No, nope.
The first one.
Vehemently against your other recommendations. No. Okay, so mine this week is a YouTube channel I fell down the rabbit hole on, in,
with,
through.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what preposition I use. It's called DIY Perks. And it's basically this guy who kind of comes up with little jobs, little projects for your home office, usually related to technology in some way. And he's this very pleasant, easy to listen to British fellow who looks a lot like Theon Greyjoy. and he walks through these different projects and they're just really, really interesting. And he's very handy. And like, it's a great mix of interesting because he's talking about things that you could potentially do, but also the process of it is very entertaining. It's very much like those process videos that we all like that are kind of relaxing to listen to. And just each episode's about 20 to 30 minutes long. A couple of good ones are he builds basically a computer built into a desk, which is not super unusual.
I guess I've seen other videos come up, but there's like one that I feel like I keep seeing. I'd wonder if it's not his.
And another one he did, which, so the computer built into the desk is cool, but the one that really struck me was he made a floating shelf that, you know, that you attach to the wall, and he built a monitor that flips down from this floating shelf. So basically you have your hidden monitor and your hidden computer.
Jeff's got them.
So those, it's awesome. It's great.
It's cool.
He also recently, this one's not as good because it's not like technically proficient. It's like a little bit more DIY cardboardy, but he has a solution for having a Zoom call and looking into the camera, but having that camera be not on your screen. So there's no way to make eye contact. Mm-hmm. And so he did this little DIY project of a prism that you put in front of, like a box you put in front of your laptop so that you're looking into the camera, but the camera's lined up with a two-way mirror to look at the
person
in the face.
Yeah, because there's always that weird thing where my videos are offset. So when I'm looking at my own video, like I'm doing right now, but I'm not looking at the camera.
Yeah, it looks
like I'm staring
exactly
off somewhere.
One more video I'm going to call out is a video called The World's Weirdest Fan. And this is one of my favorite ones. I have seen this one. Yeah, yeah. It's so bizarre. Basically, he's like, hey, look at this thing. He's like got a bellows. And he's like kind of pumping this bellows. Like, hey, see how like this fan creates, you know, air, but very silently. Is there any way I can make a large fan, I guess somewhat inspired by like CPU cooling, that I can push air without any noise? And he creates this insane box that pushes out air silently. It's ridiculous. It's like completely like, I mean, not inefficient in that, the power wise, but it's like it's so much work for such little payoff, but that's what makes it really awesome.
So you made me like think of something that I feel like is worth saying because you and I have both been building our own houses the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
And by that I mean
yeah,
like,
from scratch.
putting up like plywood.
same thing. You just do that 40 times in a row and you get a house.
Yeah, you got a fucking house. That's all it takes.
Just 40.
but it's like, I always look at those sorts of projects and it's like, it's really like kind of daunting to look at. And this weekend, because I just decided to do it, I realized that it's like, as long as you're not fucking around with like electricity or like, you know, like your gas line, or just like fucking try stuff because.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. I screwed stuff up like 30 times and it's like, well, I cut that board wrong. Now I know how to cut it right. Like I, you know, like it is the ultimate example of like learning by failure, like totally something worth doing on, if you have the space and like the means and the tools and stuff, like people, I think more people should give that stuff a try.
Yes, and I would recommend starting the way we did it in the garage.
Where nobody sees it.
your fuck-ups are not in your face. Like, I've learned a lot about, you know, drywalling in my garage. And now, if there was something in my house that needed to be drywalled,
no problem.
I feel way more comfortable doing it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the next time I mention Sonic Mania and you punch a hole through the wall, you can repair it.
Next time you mention it and I drive to Austin and punch a hole through your wall.
From my perspective, Danish runs off screen and then jumps through Josh's wall.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
All right. That's good stuff. Good recos. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Someone Should Make This. Thanks for listening. You can always tweet at us at Make This Podcast, and it would really help us out if you gave us a rating on iTunes.
Also, we have a Twitch and a YouTube. Those are also at Make This Podcast. Well, not at. Take the at out of there. It's just Make This Podcast, I believe. Fuck, I don't actually know. Danish, what is it? I think it's just Make This.
What is what?
Someone should make this.
Someone Should Make This.
Everything is Someone Should Make This. So Twitch.tv
slash Someone Should
Make This.
Except for Make This Podcast and our Gmail.
No. Our Gmail. This is all staying in. Our Gmail is Someone Should Make This Podcast. @gmail.com.
Yes, the longest.
Our Reddit is reddit.com/r/someone-should-make-this.
Yeah, okay. So
our Twitch is tv.tv. Switch.
So only our Twitter is Make This Podcast.
Yeah, Twitch, YouTube, and subreddit are all Someone Should Make This.
Even Instagram. We got an Instagram, but we don't use.
Yeah, nobody.
It's also
should use
Someone
Instagram.
Should Make
no,
This.
It's just owned by Facebook.
Oh, that's right.
All those things are Someone Should Make This. And also, if you have any comments, a game idea of your own, or think one of our ideas already exists, you can email us at the longest email address of all time, which I think was my idea.
That's easy to remember.
Someone Should Make This Podcast @gmail.com.
Thank you to Mariachi Entertainment System for letting us use their music for our theme song. You can hear more of their music at mariachimes.com.
Until next week. We've done the hard part.
Now someone should make it.
Should make it. I was going to say, last week, I coined the term, someone should make this after party.
Oh.
And so that's the after the credits section.
SMTAP.
So, yeah. Sash math. Our
Sash Math app.
Nailed it.
Jeff, you didn't hear last week's episode yet because it hasn't posted. But Sash Smash Mouth.
We're just Smash Mouth now. That's us.
Oh god. No, what have we done? Anyway, I was gonna just throw it open to you and we don't need to keep any of this, but do you guys have any after party topics you want to talk about?
That's a really good question. You know what, Danish? You and I both watched I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Oh,
that's
shit.
That's one worth talking about, I think.
Yeah, I have not watched that one yet. That one, I saw an article about it, and I didn't read it because I heard you guys talking about it in chat at the same time, and I thought I should hold off on reading anything and just give it a go.
You should watch it. I don't know if you'll like it.
What's the premise on it?
Have you seen any of Charlie Kaufman's directorial efforts?
Oh, hell
like
yeah.
Synecdoche, New York, and Anomalisa.
Adaptation. What's another one?
I'm talking about the ones he's directed specifically.
It was funny. I was just thinking about Synecdoche, New York last week, and I can't remember what made me think of it. And I was just like, it's a play about real life, and then in the play is real life, and then in the play is a play, and then the play and the play and the play. And
so, basically, Charlie Kaufman's directorial movies, and some of his written ones too, but mostly his directed ones, are really obsessed with mortality.
Oh, yeah.
That's what his movies are about.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Synecdoche, New York is totally about that. And I think this movie, I'm Thinking About Ending Things, is totally of a piece with Synecdoche, New York. It's about the same thing.
I haven't seen that, so I don't know.
It does similar things with time also, like...
Oh, Eternal Sunshine was the other one I was thinking of, and being John Malkovich. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he just wrote those.
Yeah, right. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, because this is something I thought before I even saw them.
You kind of can't spoil this movie.
No, you can't. I feel like I could say fucking anything, and you just wouldn't know what I was talking about. Right. But like going into this movie, I was like, okay, I watched the trailer. It follows this girl, and she says, I'm thinking about ending things, and she's about to go on this like road trip to meet her boyfriend's parents for the first time. It's not hard to make the jump of like, Is the title saying I'm thinking about ending things with my boyfriend, or is the title saying I'm thinking about ending things with my life?
So that's exactly how I read it when I saw the article.
Yeah.
I read it first, like, I'm thinking of killing myself. And then when I reread it a second later, I was thinking, I'm thinking of breaking up.
Yeah. So that's sort of like a pretty obvious question to start off with in that.
Sure.
It's interesting to me that I thought of that too. And the movie's about death and mortality, but I don't think it ever occurred to me that that was ever a possibility.
You mean the death part?
Suicide. That never seemed to be a theme. It was more about aging and growing old and knowing that one day you're going to die. Like, it's not a movie about suicide, I don't think.
No, not.
I think it's, so I had the same thought as you, but then after seeing the movie, I don't think it's a double meaning. I think it is.
I think there's stuff that you could read that way, depending on how you take it. But that's really like, it's not even, that's not even like the point of the movie though, whether suicide is the thing or not at any point.
It's just,
like, it's more about, well, I don't want to really talk about what it's about, but like, it sets up this like unbelievably awkward scenario of meeting your significant other's parents for the first time. And they are just like the weirdest motherfuckers on earth. And the crazy thing is like, that's not even what the movie's about, like at all.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of weird stuff. I liked it. I liked it.
I liked it too. Yeah, I definitely like his stuff. That's for sure.
Yeah. My biggest takeaway was like the female lead of the movie. I don't know what else she's been in.
She's awesome. Yeah.
She was I think this is the point of the movie, is that she is like, she plays the most like likable person like in the world. Like, she's like incredibly endearing. I don't know like what she's like in real life or anything, but
she was in Chernobyl. She was the wife in Chernobyl,
shit,
the pregnant one.
Oh, okay.
I'm just on her IMDb right now, and I saw that.
Yeah, I don't know. She's just such a great job.
And Jesse Plemons. Awesome.
Yep. Second rate.
That man more work. He's great.
Well, you just give it to Matt Damon.
I mean, I think he has a lot of work. I think you should just enjoy the work he has.
Maybe I just need to watch more of his movies.
Yeah, it's almost like Matt Damon is almost like at this point is B version of him, because he does like all the prestige. He does all the prestige stuff, and Matt Damon's just like punching shit these days. What is Matt Damon even doing lately?
I don't know. He's growing potatoes
Martian
in his
was
own
the
shit.
Last big one.
No, that's right. Mars. He did Mars Attacks potatoes.
Mars Attacks potatoes with poop.
Yeah. That guy's cool. He does a lot of weird stuff, and he's clearly into it.
I mean, his cameo or supporting role in Game Night.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Maybe his best performance of
it's
all time.
So good.
Yeah, he is good at that character. That like
even okay. So character. Even in the like very mediocre El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, like he was
mediocre.
A standout.
Movie was, fuck you. That movie was fucking awesome.
I think
I loved him, and I don't remember loving that movie.
I liked El Camino better than... I will say El Camino is unnecessary. I'll agree with that.
Yes, even Vince Gilligan said it was unnecessary.
but I enjoyed it more than I liked the actual finale of Breaking Bad.
Oh, really?
And they're both...
I think so.
And they're both good.
They're both good.
Anyway,
I
couldn't let that stand. Calling it mediocre. Anyway, yeah, he's awesome in it. He's awesome in the show.
Got hot takes over here.
Yeah. Shit, I was going somewhere with that. Oh, yeah, I was going to say that in this movie, the whole premise of his character is, according to the female lead, it's like, this is just a really nice guy. He's very, thoughtful and intelligent, and he's just a great, nice guy, but it's missing, the relationship is missing something.
Yeah, there's no like.
Right, so that's why there's no spark there, whatever. And so, and that's who he is. Like, he's pretty nice. He's well-balanced. But he's got that fucking edge to
him. Yeah, he's also that stereotypical, like, nice guy. You know, like the internet nice guy? Like, he feels like...
Sort of. But he never... Yes, but he also never does.
No, he doesn't.
Anything
he does,
like that?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to make clear, is like, he never does anything.
Yeah, the only thing he does is lose his temper a couple times.
And he talks her into, like just singing or reciting a poem that she wasn't comfortable with, which is, like, kind of shitty.
I mean, the end... The ending, the final like kind of third, is sort of a horror movie. Well, the whole movie is sort of a horror movie. But the ending of like going down this thing and like him egging her on to do the thing she doesn't want to do, and go a place she doesn't want to go.
Yeah.
That part is sort of like scary. But
it's scary in the way that like, it's not that he's an evil person intentionally, but right. he does like a bad thing because he's just kind of an idiot and doesn't understand like why the thing he's saying is bad, yeah. I guess.
The thing about Charlie Kaufman movies and this one is like, almost nothing you see is literal,
mm-hmm.
or you don't know how literal it is. Like a lot of it is serving multiple purposes of this metaphorical analogy and a literal, like these are the events that are happening. And sometimes those things really blur. Like, for example,
Synecdoche.
Jeff, you
know, yeah. Like,
Synecdoche is all about that.
Was it maybe a third to halfway into the movie? It starts getting really unclear what's real and what's not real, which is the whole fucking point.
Yeah, there's a scene in the movie, which is a very poignant scene, this is not a huge spoiler, I'm talking to Matt here, a woman goes to buy a house, and the house is literally on fire.
Oh, and then like, they, like, eat
while
like, they
they're touring
down.
The house.
Oh, you're talking about Synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
Okay, I was like, I don't remember that shit. What are you talking
about? That part, like, is stuck in my mind, like, seeing them, like, standing with the smoke billowing around them and stuff.
Yeah, and so basically, it cuts back throughout the movie and they're growing older and you see them like in old age, the house is still on fire. You know what I mean? Like it's this, that sort of thing where it's like, okay, well, is that literal? Like what's
happening?
Wait,
is this entire movie the It's Fine meme?
No.
No, but it predated that and was definitely part of it. The idea is that like she moves into the house and this is the house she's going to die in and she doesn't know that. And it's like, it's on fire and it's all sorts of
the premise
layers
is,
of symbolism.
Yeah. The premise is Philip Seymour Hoffman is a playwright. He's trying to find something real. And so he comes to the conclusion that the only way to write a play that's real in the way he wants it to be real is to recreate his life from the beginning to the end. And so, like you'll see it in the trailers and even on the box art, like he rents this enormous warehouse and rebuilds like city blocks of New York City to like recreate the apartment he grew up in. And he's got an actor playing his dad and an actor playing him at like all these different ages. And like, it is metatextual, the movie.
Wait, who's the fuck? What's his name? The actor who did the movie where he played his own dad. Recently.
Oh, Honey Boy.
Honey Boy. Yeah, Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf, like that.
Man, I want to see that movie.
Is Shia LaBeouf doing a Synecdoche?
I heard it's really good.
I think Shia LaBeouf, I haven't seen the movie at all, and I don't know Shia LaBeouf personally, but I think Shia LaBeouf is doing a Synecdoche.
No.
No.
I don't think so.
That's my theory.
I think we could go on and on about Synecdoche, but like, I mean, the idea of Synecdoche is that it's almost like a play on, you know, that Shakespeare quote, like all the world's a stage and all the men and women, but actors. Like it's kind of taking that very, very literally where like he's again, like he's recreating his life in a play that like no one is ever going to see, but he's like constantly directing it, constantly workshopping the script.
Well, nobody saw
and then
Honey
of course,
Boy.
Because the play is real life, like inside the play, his character is doing a play which is built inside the set of the play, and like it's this Russian nesting doll of
life. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So here's the thing. Here's the problem with Synecdoche, in my opinion, is that it's the whole premise of the movie is to talk about these themes, and I'm just not crazy about the premise.
Yeah.
Like, whereas I'm Thinking of Ending Things starts with a very standard premise of I'm going to meet my boyfriend's parents at the same time I'm thinking about breaking up with him. Now, using that as a vehicle to talk about all these big ideas and mortality and existential crises, that's easier to grasp onto. When you're trying to put that message, which is already super deep, into a ridiculous inception, you know, reciprocal.
Yeah. Well, it was almost
plot.
The opposite, right? Like the theme of Synecdoche is like existential, like quandary, and that's so amorphous. It's hard to hang things on it.
Right, but anyway, I like this more than Synecdoche.
Is it streaming?
I
somewhere?
Really appreciated
Synecdoche.
I don't
is
know.
Is it Synecdoche?
It's Synecdoche,
New York.
New York. That's the full title. I used to have a DVD. I think I might have donated it when I cleaned house.
That's fine. Well, I can find it somewhere.
Let's go to justwatch.com, your place to search all streaming services at the same
time.
We
are not sponsored by anybody because we would get fired. Well, me and Danish would. Jeff's allowed to do stuff.
I can do whatever I want.
Synecdoche, New York, 2008. It is available to rent.
How much? $3? I'll do $3.
$3 on Amazon.
Hell yeah. So, Dan, I have one question for you, and it's kind of a weird question. How did you feel about the pacing of...
I didn't think it needed to be 2 hours, 15 minutes. It could have been half an hour shorter, and I still would have got everything out of it.
I mean,
I like the structure of it, where the first half, or the first third is the car ride there. The middle third is them there at the house, and the last third is the car ride back, kind of. I love that structure. I think they could have kept that and cut out half an hour easily.
So it's interesting that you say that, because I remember watching it. It was pretty late at night. Kelsey had already gone to bed. And I just had gotten the feeling, like, this is a weird fucking movie that Kelsey's probably not going to be into. Yeah. And if it's good, we'll watch it again, whatever. I had the movie on, and I was, you know, the movie starts and it's with her, and they set up the premise, and I'm like, oh, she's really likable. He's really weird. Like, you know, I'm getting this. They're having all these like interesting conversations. And like, I felt like this car ride had been going on for a while, and my mm-hmm. drink ran out, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go refresh my drink. Pause. It had been on for 15 minutes. I felt like the movie had been on for at least half an hour, 45 minutes.
Synecdoche for me was very similar, where it felt like the movie was just like going on and on. And I think the structure and like the premise of that movie in particular kind of fostered it feeling like it was dragging, because like in a lot of ways you're watching the same thing over and over again with Synecdoche, just like in different contexts, is interesting.
It felt intentional to me, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Like, I think a long car ride.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's something he does, even when he's like writing stuff, I feel like he has a really interesting idea of time and the way that it plays out. And that translates into like his films having kind of a more odd pacing, because Anomalisa was kind of like that too. Like, it's really short, but it feels like a feature length film.
How long is that?
Yeah.
Sorry, Danish.
It's like an hour and a half.
It's like 80 minutes. Yeah. It's.
Maybe it might be longer than that. I don't know. I was going to say, speaking of long car ride movies, have you guys seen Lock, the movie with Tom Hardy?
No.
Where the whole movie is him driving in a car?
I really wanted to see Capone, but I heard really bad things about it.
Yeah, I heard bad things about that too.
Check who's that.
This movie, Lock, is fucking awesome. It's the whole movie's in the car, and he's driving and talking on the phone, and that's the whole movie. And he plays a character who is supposed to, he's like, I think he's leaving work or something, but instead of going home, his family is like, wife and kids are waiting for him, and he's calling them like, no, I'll be late. I might be late, this and that. And meanwhile, he's going somewhere else, and you don't know where he's going or don't know why or what he's doing. And he's dealing with this emergency at work, and he's just kind of like juggling these phone calls. But it's just so mesmerizing. Like, he is incredible. It's like one of his best performances.
That sounds like something I'd be super into. That's got to be streaming.
Yeah.
Let's check. Look it up.
Justwatch.com.
You just leave it open.
Jeff,
what's the other movie that you were just saying?
That I was just saying?
Yeah.
Anomalisa? That's another Kaufman one.
Yeah, what
is
it?
It's a stop-motion animated. And that one's crazy because he...
Don't say the thing.
Well, no, like
there's something.
No, I'm not gonna. I know what you're thinking, and that is what I'm thinking. Okay. But I'm just saying, like, he plays with the medium in really interesting ways.
Oh yeah, I remember like seeing like buzz about this. I never watched it though.
It was really good.
Which one should
I
watch?
That one in theaters.
Of those two movies, which one should I watch?
Synecdoche or Anomalisa?
Yeah, Synecdoche or Anomalisa.
I like Anomalisa.
Yeah,
better.
Anomalisa is a better movie.
Synecdoche is like more like I'm thinking of ending things in terms of the weirdness. Okay.
Which is
New
a lot
York
to take in 1 week.
Feels like a college course, whereas Anomalisa is just like, taking more a pottery like a class at a community college.
Well done. Lock is available to rent for $2 or $3 on Amazon, but you can find it for free on Fubo. What
the fuck is
Hoopla?
What are these?
Canopy.
These aren't real.
Direct and DirecTV.
Hublo, Jublo, and
actually no, Hoopla. Hoopla is a thing. Hoopla,
all of those
is...
sound fake, especially this DirecTV. Who names these things?
That's garbage.
Yeah. I forgot that we were still recording. Hoopla is a good one, and listeners, check this out. It is a library video service. So basically, you open up the app, you download the app, and you enter in your library card, and that's your user ID. And then you can watch movies.
Wait, what? Your actual library card?
Yeah.
That's nuts. So I learned a little bit about the libraries down here in Austin, and apparently you can check out ebooks and audiobooks, which
yeah,
is like weird to me because like it's digital. Like there are infinite
yeah.
numbers of them.
Those don't belong
they
in
don't
buildings.
Cost anything. Yeah, that too.
They printed out the ebook.
Oh, I see.
That's
I see.
What libraries are. Printed out ebooks. Jesus Christ. I think I'm going to watch Mona Lisa tonight. Or should I watch Locke?
Yeah.
Do you have strong feelings?
Well, Locke is on Hoopla.
What the fuck is
your library
the fuck?
Card?
I don't have a library card.
It says DirecTV, which I assume we have. And you could probably find it on the like DirecTV movies thing.
Oh, I got a
you know.
Oh
your
yeah,
your cable box,
the little box with the remote.
Yeah,
cable.
However, the thing you works. Ignore when you turn your PlayStation on that thing.
Absolutely, I have no clue if that's even working.
I would say
I don't even
Locke
have
and
TV.
Anomalisa are like sad.
I'm okay with sad.
Anomalisa sad, to though. Me was kind of charming though.
Anomalisa, you said.
Yeah, like the main character is, I don't remember a lot of specifics, but I have this impression that he was a little pitiable, but he was like very charming and fun to watch.
Huh.
But
he was a real sad sack.
Okay, so maybe I'm misremembering this.
But not uncharming.
Somebody I can really relate to.
Not uncharming.
Well, because the whole movie he's a sad sack who's alone attending this conference. He's like in a hotel and like meets
right.
this woman. And it's kind of like a love story, and there's parts that are really sweet.
I just remembered the hook, which I totally forgot.
Wait,
where
you're
he
talking
has face
about...
blindness. That's like how it like he has face blindness.
I think Danish seems disappointed, but I do think I knew that. I think that was part of.
No, that's not the face I was making.
Okay. Well, I'm face blind, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch Anomalisa. I think I'm going to watch that tonight. I don't know why that's appealing to me. I just, do you ever get that thing where like the world makes you so sad that you just want to like deep
yes.
dive into sadness and maybe you can just swim through to the other side?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at right now, I think.
I got a movie for you. It's called Grave of Fire.
Now listen.
The saddest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Hey, and Ghibli's streaming now.
It is, although I don't know if that's...
Oh, that's a Ghibli movie? I don't know what that's
that
about.
Wasn't that like one of his, it was like in the first three or four of his
it
films.
Was not Miyazaki, it was Takahata, I think, but it was a Ghibli movie.
But I think the Disney thing is Miyazaki specific.
Yeah, I
oh,
think
is it?
So I don't see any of his other ones on there because he made
because I've been meaning to go through movies. I have not seen most Studio Ghibli films and I'm kind of embarrassed about that.
Oh, me too.
I did
me,
listen
me and
to the
been...
entire Blake Check series on Miyazaki,
yeah.
But I haven't seen most of them.
I had not seen any of them other than Howl's Moving Castle because that came out when I was in my prime, like,
yeah,
watch movies
yeah,
on
I,
my computer.
I really did
days.
Not like that movie.
It was fine.
I think I hit with Spirited Away first, and then I watched My Neighbor Totoro after that, and then Howl's Moving Castle came out in theaters, and then I saw that. I did not
There's
see.
There's
got
to be a Ponyo's. Mixed.
No,
some people love it.
I fucking love Ponyo. I
oh really?
Here's the thing. Me and Kelsey. So Kelsey didn't know any. She didn't even know like what they were. I mean, she probably mm-hmm. knew like she probably had like heard them in the ether or whatever. But like I was like, hey, let's watch like some Studio Ghibli movie. Is it Ghibli or Ghibli? Whatever.
Ghibli.
They're all on Disney Plus. And she was like, oh, I don't really know anything about those. So she wasn't interested. And I was like, well, let me hit you with a Totoro. And so, of course, she's like instantly bought it because Totoro is fucking dope. But also, I hadn't seen Totoro. I just knew of it. And I...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you watched this... You put together watched the
yeah,
same time.
Yeah, so all
awesome.
Of these because I hadn't
wow.
seen any of
Man,
them.
Man, we yeah, need yeah. a Ghibli report
well,
on our podcast now.
Oh,
so
shit.
So my whole thing was like, this movie doesn't have a story. Like, and I'm
yeah.
like watching a lot of them. Like, because we watched that and then we watched... What else did we watch? I don't know. We watched a few of them. And then it wasn't until we got to Kiki's Delivery Service where I was like, oh, finally, this has a beginning, middle, and end
story.
And like that was my favorite one because I was just like things happen.
I
in
love
this.
Kiki.
And then
yeah, I think Kiki is a lot
I just
of
bought
favorites.
The new translation. It was based on a book, a Japanese book. And for my daughter, I just bought her the new English translation, which is supposed to be really good. So I'm intending to read it as
but
well.
But then we got to Ponyo, but, yeah, and I was that. Like, Ponyo, I remember Ponyo being billed as like the Japanese mermaid. Little mermaid. And so yeah. That's what we went into it thinking. And I was like, fucking kind of, I guess.
yeah, it's not.
And, but I also really liked it just because it was like so weird.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It was super weird. It did have a beginning, middle, and end. There was like a clear like issue. I think that was actually my favorite one that we've watched.
Interesting. The thing about like Totoro, especially, but I think in a lot of his films, like he's really interested in like taking this moment in time and like just like looking at how people process it.
Yeah.
Because obviously like in that one, like I think the mother is sick with like something unknown and like it's just kind of like how do the daughters feel about this for an hour and a half?
It starts getting
Wait,
real
have you
dark
seen Totoro,
there.
Jeff?
What?
Have you seen Totoro?
I haven't seen Totoro in like two decades.
But you have
but I have no, seen I
see.
It.
Yeah, it gets the ending gets really dark and then clears up real fast. Which is kinda it's like yeah it's what you said. It's like the girls are just kind of like dealing with shit. Totoro comes out of fucking nowhere.
But that's not, that's a little misleading to say that's what the movie's
no,
about.
No, yeah,
that's,
it's not, that's...
It's the movie's about childhood wonder and...
But
sure.
With no real direction,
nature.
Guess,
the, with no direction, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then at the end...
It's only at the end...
It gets
right,
dark.
Thing that
it doesn't even get... I don't want to say it gets explicitly dark.
It doesn't get dark
but
either.
It gets it's potentially dark. Like they set up stakes
yeah,
that could be horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And then I guess I don't want to say what happens.
My favorite is Porco Rosso.
We watched that. That was fun. It was,
oh God, I love it so
not
much.
Not my favorite.
Did you watch the one? Did you watch the dub with Michael
so
Keaton?
We watched the original one and okay. Have you seen the original, subtitled one?
Yeah.
He's a fucking pervert.
What?
He's a fucking pervert, dude. He's hitting on like a 13-year-old girl. It's fucking crazy.
I don't remember
yeah,
that.
They change it in the dubbed version. It's here's the thing. You're reading text, right? So it's kind of hard to get like the way things
tone,
are.
Yeah.
But he's like, he is explicitly talking about this young girl's like looks and saying like, oh, if you do this, you'll stay pretty, like shit like that. And they change it in the Michael Keaton one where he's like, if you do this, you'll stay like, I don't know, it's been a while, but they basically change it like
right.
You'll stay like awake or alert or something. Like they take like attractiveness out of it. It was because I went back, I was like, we watched the subtitled one first because I couldn't find like the fucking drop down menu to get the dubbed version. And so we watched the subtitled one and like a couple times I turned to Kelsey and I was like, this fucking pig is damn. And then I was like, oh, afterwards I found the way to go to the dubbed version. I was like, I gotta see what the
You got to hear these words coming
yes,
out of Michael Keaton's
and
mouth.
Those words didn't come out of Michael Keaton's mouth. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They knew better.
I saw the reprisal, or what do they call it, revival of the Ghibli movies last summer when they were at AMC. And I took my kids, and actually I went with Dan and his kid, and we saw Totoro. Dan had never seen Totoro. And we got the dubbed version, obviously, because the kids. But it was so fucking annoying that it was the dubbed version, and they still had the subtitles
what?
On. The Japanese subtitles. So
they probably don't even match up, do they?
No, they didn't. It was annoying because like I had to stop myself from reading them because
right.
Like your eyes get drawn to it. It's fucking annoying. But it was somewhat interesting that you could see exactly where they changed it. And Totoro was a lot of subtle stuff. Nothing huge like
you
that.
Should
so
watch.
That reminds, so
that we should watch Porco Rosso subtitled again.
I need to to watch all these for sure. But that reminds me of when I watched the Cowboy Bebop movie. The first version I got was in Japanese. There was no English dub on the disc. And then I got it later in English. And there was this one joke that like this hacker guy makes like midway through where he's playing Pac-Man, I think. And then he dies in the game. But like that's like juxtaposed with this guy he's with like killing a security guard, and he's just like, oh, I died. And he turns up, he's like, oh, he died. And like the delivery is just like really like it drives the joke home. But then in the English version, they don't even attempt to make that joke again. And I was so disappointed because it's like, I don't know, it just stuck out to me.
Have you guys, I mean, I don't know about Jeff, but Matt, we saw Your Name and yeah. I think we saw it subtitled, right?
I think so.
There's a dub of it, and there's, in the subtitle, there's lots of like wordplay about like gender pronouns in the Japanese language. And I was thinking like, how do you even translate this? There's like so much subtle stuff going on. Cause even in the subtitles, it actually tells you as like an English reader what the context is of those words. And I always meant to go back and listen to it and dub to see how they even handled that scene. It's interesting.
Something I feel like we probably should have mentioned at the top is that I guess we have a new thing where we go on for another hour at the end of our episode.
I mean, like I said, last week I mentioned it in the show notes, like in show description. Yeah. That we're introducing. Someone should make this after.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, okay. You did kind of mention it. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if this would be a good like midweek release where we just like cut this and like drop it on a Thursday or something as like a supplemental.
Having it in there.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good at the back end. Like I was saying in the last episode as well that one of my favorite podcasts, the Slash Filmcast, they have a thing called the After Dark. So I didn't want to fully rip off that name. No, after we're the after party.
Oh, we're after party. Okay, I'm gonna forget. Yeah. Which one's which?
Exactly. Then we'll
I think it's better to put it at the end of the episode because like if people don't want it, they can just skip. But
exactly,
if
and they constantly make jokes about no one's listening to this, but the thing is, they have lots of listeners, and many of them like they say like people love the After Darks. It's their most popular thing. And so I think, you know,
the unstructured, yeah, we'll see. Talking about shit for no real reason.
I mean, that giant bomb built a whole empire on it.
Yeah, they did.
We're like a baby.
I mean,
baby
we're not
bomb.
I'm not comparing ourselves to the
we're hand grenade.
Wonderful.
We're like a tiny black cat.
Yeah, exactly. Pop cat.
Yeah.
Can't use that name.
Nope.
<It's> taken.
Just a little bit.
Well, I think that was fun. We talked about some stuff. I'm gonna watch Anomalisa now.
Hell yeah.
We still don't know how to end these, is the thing.
No, that's the problem. That's what happened last time with Dan. We're like, yep. Hey, have you seen this show?
We're talking about something completely different.
We need like a sound effect you can grab from like some end stage sound.
All right, Stop Twitter, it. YouTube, Twitch, whatever. Someone should make this. Bye everybody.
We've done this.